You're listening to Bob Tanum in the Garden.
She's going to tell us all about the wonderful things going on this next week or so. Here you go. Here's Edie.
All right. Good morning, everybody, and happy Easter. And thank you for everybody who visited the website this week. That's wonderful. So if you're looking for anything interesting going on in the gardens or your neighborhood, Master Gardeners Association, that is all listed on our website for their website. So their websites are listed to our website. So go to bobtanum.com and you can always find your Master Gardener, local Master Gardeners there, and a link to their site so that you can find out about what's going on. Also, California Native Plant Society is having a talk with Juanita Salisbury called Native Plant Pollinators. This is coming up on... I didn't write down the date. That's so strange. I did write down the time at 7:30 to 9. It'll be a YouTube presentation. You can call 650-260-3450 to find out more information. This is the California Native Plant Society of Santa Clara Valley. So you can link on to their pre-recorded shows at www.youtube.com/C/CNPS Santa Clara Valley for more information. You can also go directly to their website, which is also linked at our website, www.cnps-scv.org. April 8th, 7 p.m., After Dark Bees at the Exploratorium San Francisco. So this is happening April 8th at 7 p.m. They've got a lecture series that happens every weekend, and every week, I think, different nights every week. You can see this on Facebook, facebook.com/exploratorium, or you can go to their website, which is exploratorium.edu. And again, that's happening April 8th, and that's all about bees. April 9th, Spring Edible Series, let's see if I can say this. Good bug, bad bug. There we go. And this is sponsored by the San Mateo San Francisco Master Gardeners. And this is April 9th from 1 to 2:15 on Friday. So a little lecture series there. And you can go to see that at SMSF, San Mateo, San Francisco, -mastergardeners.ucanr.edu. All right, so that's coming up. Also, next Saturday, April 10th, Gardening in the Virtual Age at 9 a.m. And this is for Amador County Master Gardeners. But just because you don't live there, you can still try to see it. You can go to ucanr.zoom.us. That's a basic channel for all the Master Gardeners and the entire state. So that if you're interested in one thing or another, see if you can hook up yourself to a class there. But that one is happening April 10th, and it's all about the virtual age of gardening. And so that's coming up. So Saturday, April 10th also, 10 to 12, Garden for the Environment, which is a local place that puts on all sorts of workshops in San Francisco and online, of course. This one is, get tickets for this, because they do charge for every class, www.eventbrite.com, and look for Garden for the Environment. This class is April 10th from 10 to 12. It's Grow Your Own Food in April. So you can see they have monthly events as well. You can go to their website at www.gardenfortheenvironment.org, gardenfortheenvironment.org, or you can give them a call at 415-558-8246. 415-558-8246. And we've got the, let's see, April 7th coming up this week, 7:30, Native Plant Pollinators. I did that one. Okay, so that was easy. Boy, that was a whole page. I just went right through. That was great. Okay. Oh, I saw Juanita's name again, and I'm like, I already said that. Okay, because that was last week. So Wednesday, April 7th, Summer Garden Soil Prep. That's still coming up at 5 p.m. This is the Center for Agroecology and Sustainable Food Systems. This is a group down at the UC Santa Cruz. So they've got Zoom webinars. You can always hook up to whatever they're doing at the moment that they're doing it or in the future by calling 831-459-3240. 831-459-3240. This is Center for the Agroecology and Sustainable Food. They also have a website, CASFS. So that's California, CASF. Don't know what it stands for. S like Sam, F like Frank, and S like Sam. .UCSC. All right, that sounds like fun. I think we're good, Dad. We'll get you to your callers now.
Yeah. Oh, there. Here we go. Hey, thanks for all of that, Edie. Let's go to Scott in San Francisco. Hi there, Scott.
Good morning, Bob. I had a question about rose bush leaves. My wife has planted some rose bushes in half of 55-gallon wooden barrels in the back of her house, four or five wooden barrels, and the plants themselves are about a foot apart, but lately there's been this rust-colored stuff on the leaves, on the bottom of the leaves, and we've been trimming that stuff off, but it seems to be coming back on.
No, you're not going to get ahead of it that way. Scott, you've got to spray for it. There's a product on the market. It's called Actinovate. It's the only product on the market that will eliminate rust on the leaves. In San Francisco, with the cool and hot and, the mixed-up weather that we're having, it's pretty much going to be a standard thing for a lot of other plants, including geraniums. So everybody ought to look for that. But if you can find Actinovate, that's the will eliminate it. One of the things, if you can find that, spray the area with liquid copper. That will help slow it down in a way. Okay?
What do you mean, spray the area? What does that mean?
Like in the ground, spray the ground around that, spray the shrub with liquid copper, and that should help. Area means the whole yard, basically where you have the roses.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Where do you think a fella could find Actinovate anyway?
Oh, it's. I know you can go to Amazon. They have it. But then that's
all right.
That's one of the better ones that I can recommend. Try Ace Hardware. Sometimes they have it as well.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Hey, Scott, thank you for the call. You take care. Well, we're going to go to Baja Bob in Baja. Mm-hmm. Hi there, Bob.
Hi, how are you? Good morning. Happy Easter.
Thank you. And you too.
Question about a hibiscus. I've got three hibiscus that are fairly well grown together. They look real nice. They're about 3 years old.
Okay.
Never before have I seen on the leaves, the tips of the leaves are turning black, and there are other black spots on it, and it is going from a green from the tip towards the back of the leaf, a yellow.
Hmm. Wow. I suspect a problem with drainage. Oftentimes when you get that, Bob, is you get a where the drainage somehow or other. Are these in a container or are they in the ground?
No, they're in the ground.
Okay. So in Baja, you don't get frost, so I think you're fine with that. And what you can do is maybe, okay, I'm thinking that maybe the water that you're getting is a full of alkaline or lime or something on that order. And I'd recommend if you could possibly find a way to take a pH test and test that out, because hibiscus do not like to have anything above 6.5.
Okay. And the soil in that, the way that where they're planted slopes down and there is a brick border, so it does capture the water a little bit. So I was thinking maybe overwatering may have been part of
no,
the
because they're tropical. They can take all the water they can get. And with that in mind, what you're describing sort of backs up what I'm saying, is that you have a pH problem.
All right. And
how to correct
that? So what's the solution? Yeah.
Acid, get some rhododendron, azalea, camellia food, fertilizer, and put that on your plant, and that'll correct the pH. It'll at least lower it. But I know that's pretty much. One of the other things you can do, Bob, is to cultivate the ground around that so that when the water does happen, that it actually does penetrate and perhaps drains. How? Okay, you're telling me also that it collects at the edge of the brick wall there, or whatever you describe. But yeah, maybe the saturation there is getting to be a problem as well. So just check it out, and I think a pH test is where to start.
All
a little
right.
tiny thing. Go to rhododendron, azalea food, fertilizer.
Okay, and a pH test, and
yeah, a little, start with that.
The little tape looking things that you can get, or what?
No, go to it's a little jar thing that you shake up, and you can find out about it.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
A nurseryman will know what you're talking about, at least.
Sure.
That's from nurseryman to nurseryman. You got it? Okay.
Bob. Very good. Hey. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. You take care, and thanks for listening. We're going to have to take a little break, so Randy and George and Henry, just hang on. We'll be right back. This is Bob Tanum in the Garden Talk.
You're listening to Bob Tanum in the Garden on Talk Radio 560.
Hey, good morning, Bob. How you doing? Happy Easter to you.
You too. Thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, got a couple questions, Bob. We've had no luck transplanting some pine trees. We have a couple properties, and we take some off of one property, put them on the other. And then we have several friends that live in the adjoining areas, and they just pluck them and throw them away, and we kind of like to try to transplant them here at the ranch. And we've heard several different scenarios on how to transplant these trees, and I've even taken compass readings and put little twist ties on a branch and taken a north reading and then, you know, orientating that tree when I get it back to the ranch to the north, and, you know, and just nothing has seemed to work. So, and
what time of year, Randy, are you doing this?
About now. So snow's just coming off the ground pretty good. The ground's starting to get a little heat in it. And we dig, you know, about an 8-inch tree. We'll dig about a foot and a half circle, plenty deep. We take a little bit of composting soil from the barn with the goats and the hay and everything, put a little bit in the bottom for some nourishment. And then the natural soil back in, and nothing seems to work, Bob. So,
well, timing, I think, is the problem you're having, Randy. I think it would be in the best time would be around. Well, this is hard because you get the snow. What is the first snow and frost that you get there? What time of the year?
I would say about the third week in November.
Okay.
Typically, we get our first snow.
What I would try to do is maybe just a couple of weeks before you anticipate the snow that you transplant the pines. If they can go through a winter, what happens is these plants grow roots through the winter, even in the cold weather.
Oh, really? Okay.
See the logic behind that. So that if you can transplant them, you could even bare root them, and I think they would take after that. Because I've had some really great success doing that exact same thing with Japanese maples, and they are very sensitive to all of those kind of things. Of course, I don't have the frost and the snow that you have, but I can do that with Japanese maples. Just as they are starting to go dormant kind of place. And that's what you want to. That's when you want to do it, because once you get them in the ground, they don't care because they will continue to grow their roots through the wintertime. And then, you know, come spring, golly, look at where I am. Let me know about that, because that's my logical kind of approach to this. Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, but I think you'll have better luck anyway. Okay.
Well, you'll know in a year.
There you go. All right, Randy. All right.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Bob.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for the call. Anyway, you local people, where are you? Come on, get on. I've got, you know, Baja and local and this and that, and they're taking over. But you know, where are you? And that's okay. We can do that. We have a lot of different kinds of things that going on at this time of the year. where we are in California, where the Bay Area and things like that. For example, I'm just now preparing the ground to get ready to transplant some seed for sunflowers and zinnias and that type of thing. Also, if you want to make a cutting on geraniums today and tomorrow, and this is a pretty good time to do it. They're just barely coming out of dormancy, and it's a good time to catch them before they are out of dormancy. So you might want to do that with your geraniums or pelargoniums and all of that type of thing. In the east or up in Colorado or Idaho, they would take their cuttings in the fall and then store them through the winter and then plant them in the spring. But in California, we don't have that kind of cold weather. We don't have snow on the ground, at least in the Bay Area, that I know of, for any practical purposes or anything like that. So, whatever. And in the meantime, our numbers, if you'd like to call locally, 141, yeah, happy Easter, 1415, then 808-5600. I had some interesting thoughts coming out of getting ready for Easter. We'll be expecting people this year, but only about 50% of the people that want to usually come to my Easter extravaganza will be here. And it's because of the COVID-19. And I'm trying to find the logic behind wearing a mask after you get the shot. There is no logic to it. So let me know about that. Anyway, Zena from San Jose, local. Hi there, Zena. How are you this morning?
Hi. I'm fine, Bob. How are you?
Pretty good.
Happy Easter.
You too.
I have a quick question. So I don't know if you remember, we spoke maybe a month or so ago about me transplanting this dwarf mandarin orange tree.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, I did about maybe 3 weeks ago. And the first week or so, it looked pretty good. Now the leaves are falling off. So I'm wondering if that's normal.
Okay,
maybe going through shock.
Describe the, is there any new growth?
Since I planted it about 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it looks like there are some really tiny little leaves trying to grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as long as those are starting to, as long as there seems to be some new growth, I would not be concerned about it. But because
okay.
That would be not, I wouldn't say normal, but it can happen with kind of thing that going on. So I would not be overly concerned with that. But what you might try is to. Of course, I love VF-11 as a spray for that kind of situation. It will help the plant a lot if you can find it.
It's called what?
VF-11.
VF-11, okay.
Yeah, it's available in a lot of nurseries, but I Ace Hardware will have it as well in their garden shop. So that should help. I do that kind of thing almost automatically whenever I transplant something.
Oh, okay. Okay, I did give it some fertilizer and some shock, solution.
Like B12, yes.
Okay, and also, how often should I water it?
How often have you watered
it? Once a week.
Now this is a new one. You should do it twice a week at least.
Okay.
That'll help.
So I've been watering it about twice a week, but I wasn't sure if I need to let it dry out. A couple of weeks ago,
no,
we had that.
Well, it's only been, how long has it been transplanted?
Maybe 3 weeks.
Oh, okay. You got to do it twice a week. And it was transplanted from a container to the ground or from the ground to what?
From the ground to the ground.
Oh, okay. Yeah, at least twice a week. You got to keep it moist, but don't let it get saturated either. I mean, that's one of those things you got to watch too as well. So, all right. There you go.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Zena. I hope you help. Paula's in San Martin. How can I help you, Paula?
Hi, Bob. I have a question similar to my brother Randy in Garden Valley, Idaho.
Okay.
I have a sago palm, and it has a little baby on it, and I wonder, how can I separate that and make another plant?
You can do that in the fall. That's when they're dormant, and you can just take a saw and cut it off.
Really? And then
is just that, no, hold on, Paula. Let me caveat in that a little bit. Usually what happens when you get those sports on the bottom near that, half of the plant has formed roots. So check that out before you get too excited about cutting it off. And if it has roots, go ahead and do that. Yeah.
Okay. So look, I have to look underground to see if there's roots and then just saw it off?
That's it.
Okay. I'll try it, and I'll let you know in a year.
There you go, Paul. we're that's where we are. Okay, well, all right. Thank you for getting even with me. All right. All right, Paul, you take care. All right, we're going to have to take a little break. So Sandra, Pat, Helen, and George, just hang on for a second or two. We'll be right back. This is Bob Tanum in the Garden.
You're listening to Bob Tanum in the Garden on Talk Radio 560 KSFO.
Hi there, Bob. Thank you for what you do. You're just awesome. I have a problem. So you had told me on this water saturated, slightly muddy ground, I was in the process of transplanting a 8-inch crimson queen maple. Mm-hmm. And you told me to wait to make sure and, you know, put the soil amendment or mix in there and wait till it gets crumbly a little and dry. Well, I left the house and my husband had saw that, you know, I started that. So he thought, okay, I'll go ahead and put that in, unbeknownst to me. he put it in and put some maple fertilizer. And on top of it, he then did what he normally is instructed to do, he watered it. So when I got home, I put my foot on it, and it was soggy, and water kind of came up. So should I take that little 8-inch plant out?
No, Sandra, just leave it alone. Hopefully that will drain over a period of time. But as long as it's wet, I think you're okay for a while. It should be leafing out, of course. I would give it another week or so, and if it looks like
this this was yesterday. So
oh, okay. Yeah, I would sure. And see how it drains. You know, if it drains okay, you know, if it sort of gets crumbly again, why then you're in good shape then.
And if it's still kind of like muddy a little bit, that'll be okay in a week, or pull it out?
No. I think the damage is already done one way or the other. It's either going to make it or not. But transplanting it again won't help.
Oh, gosh. This is actually, I've had it in the container for a year.
Just don't let your husband water again.
Oh, my gosh. I was so upset, and I thought, calm down. He didn't talk to Bob. He doesn't know what Bob said. He was doing what you call a honeydew list that ended up being a honey poop list. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what Easter's all about, right? Resurrection.
Okay. It probably won't die, huh?
Yeah. No, I think it'll make it, Sandra. They're fairly, they're okay. But I just don't let it water again. But I say give it a week, go out, test it out, and I think that you can judge the watering from that point on, and that will give you a clue as to how often to water it.
Okay. All right. I'll say my prayers for Easter and for my little maple tree. Thank you, Bob. And a prayer for you. I'll say a prayer for you, Bob, because you and your family are so wonderful. Thank you for all you do.
Well, we try. You know, it's a little harder sometimes. Gravity is increasing, and that's my biggest problem. So anyway, Sandra, thank you so much for the call. Thanks for listening. Let's go to Pat in Antioch. Hi there, Pat.
I do, Bob. I listen to you all the time. You're great.
Thank you.
What I have is a Myers lemon tree that I had for years. It produced beautiful lemons. But this year, the lemons are like golf balls. What happened?
How often do you feed it, Pat?
I don't feed it that much. I'm that kind of guy. I just don't like to feed it because I don't know how to regulate it.
Well, that's why you want to do it when you have a fertilizer that doesn't burn, sort of like an organic citrus food. I would, Pat, okay. I think that what I would recommend, one, is to add alfalfa to whatever you feed it, alfalfa pellets or alfalfa meal or something like that, and then also to go to an organic citrus fertilizer. Now, it's available at most nurseries, and I think one of my favorites is produced by E.B. Stone, which would be, I know they have a whole line of organic citrus and azalea and all that kind of food. So I would do that, and I would do it once a month, 12 months out of the year, because what you're describing is a lack of potassium and other materials and probably some mineral. That is causing your golf ball size citrus. So get busy, do that, and put it on a schedule.
Oh, boy, that's hard for me. I'm your age, and I forget a lot.
Well, after Bob's radio show. But,
tune in once, once a week, and we'll let you know when to fertilize. Or put it on, have you got a calendar, maybe? I have three of them.
Yeah.
And I put an X there.
I got a ball every room.
Okay. All right.
The other thing is the growth at the base on that Myers tree. What do I do with that? Did I cut that out or what?
What was it?
Growth. The growth of lemon branches and stuff.
Oh, at the base. Yeah, I would cut those off. Yeah.
Just cut them off?
Yep.
Okay, and the other thing, does wood chip covering affect any plants? Wood chip?
Well, it may, if it's decomposing, take some of the nitrogen out of the ground, and if you have plants in that area, they may show signs of lack of fertilizer.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think about that, yeah. They may take the chips away, you mean?
No, just leave them there and then fertilize them more. Get some organic stuff to feed. Get an all-purpose fertilizer from your local nurseries, and they'll help you out with that one, okay?
Okay, the other thing, I didn't catch it, but what are the thorns on a Washington Naval orange tree? The new branches with thorns on them?
Oh.
Do you cut those off or do you just leave them alone?
Okay, Pat, if they are down by the base of the tree coming from there,
big thorns, but they're in the middle of the tree.
Well, yeah, you can cut those off because it's not going to hurt the tree. Yeah, why fiddle around with those? Sometimes citrus will throw out thorny kind of limbs. And you can eliminate those if you wish, because they really serve no purpose.
Oh, they don't, huh?
No.
So it don't affect the tree if I cut them?
Nope. You want to keep
great.
It? Yeah. So, you know, I oftentimes see this coming out of older citrus where you have a big thorny branch. I'm not sure what happens genetically with that. But it will be something that you can eliminate because those thorny branches will not bear decent fruit.
I noticed that, I was just worried about cutting them out.
No, don't worry about it. Just eliminate them.
Oh, thanks a million, Bob. You're great. Keep it up. And I listen to you every day, every Sunday.
Well, I'm delighted you do, Pat, and thank you. And happy Easter and all that good stuff. Okay?
Same to you and your family.
Thank you so much. All right, you take care. Let's go to Helen in Santa Clara. You're local. I thought I was international here for a while. Anyway, Helen, welcome.
Good morning to you, Bob, and have a pleasant Easter day.
Well, we're going to have a good crowd. Yeah.
That's good. Enjoy. Well,
we also have an Easter egg hunt for adults. Ever thought about that?
Yeah, I've heard I heard you speak of that in the past years. That's pretty
it's
neat.
It's sort of fun. Well, yeah, you know, we ran out of kids to have Easter eggs, so I thought, well, let's put lottery tickets in the hollow eggs and hide those, which I have yet to do today, but I have to hide them from Edie if, you know, all that kind of good stuff. So we'll figure that one out.
Idea. Okay, my call is, I've deadheaded the daffodils now, and yeah. I'm wondering if I should fertilize at this time, and if so, to do that, and at a later time, when?
Okay, Helen, you're right on right now, because they have been deadheaded on the seed pot, is to give them the fish emulsion food right now.
Okay.
And then one more time, as they are really almost shriveled up, the tops, I mean.
Oh, okay.
And then the third time will be in the fall when they first start showing their head.
All right.
That's your schedule.
Fish Marshall, all righty.
You know, and I got that from Rosemary Very, who actually is... a person of report, a gardener in England, and she had a picture of her daffodils that were 22 years old. It was glorious. I mean, it was just really beautiful.
Yeah. I had about 50 feet by 3 feet. They were just beautiful. They were real gorgeous. It just almost very inspiring. So spring is here.
And I love daffodils. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And you can't ever plant enough of them in gardens. I love them all over the place. But they do take that care, and that care just seems to multiply them. They love it.
Okay. So do I water some in between, or how about watering? I'm curious about that, too.
Well, if you only have daffodils, then I would water until they dry up, and then perhaps not water until they anticipate in the spring, in the fall.
Okay, until dry. Right. Okay, very good. Well, great getting to talk with you again.
Okay, Helen.
Take care.
Well,
bye-bye.
Thank you, and happy Easter and all that good stuff.
Oh,
we're going to have to take a little break right now and then get right back to all of your calls. In fact, we don't have any calls, so come on. Yeah, 1-415-808-5600. You can also go to my website, bobtanum.com, or you can email me at bobtanum@aol.com. All sorts of ways to do that. I won't give you my home phone number. That's not something I really want to do. Anyway, we're going to take a little break, and we'll get right back to all of your calls. Hopefully you'll have some. This is Bob Tanum on the Garden Talk Radio 560, and it is KSFO.
You're listening to Bob Tanum in the Garden on Talk Radio 560.
Oh, good morning, Bob, and a blessed Easter to you and yours.
Thank you so much.
I have we have a grower down the street that grows pumpkins professionally, and we talked about this before. He puts them in around June. Now, I have these Atlantic Giant pumpkin seeds that I want to start, if it's proper, to put them in 4-inch containers to start them, if I could do it that way. And then if I do, when do I start them, and when do I put them in the ground?
Okay. With those, I would do the, you can start them, let's see, this is April, towards the end of this month, I would start them in the 4-inch pots. Is that what you're trying to do?
Okay. Right.
Which is a good idea. And then, transplant them out. Well, I would wait until they get their second leaves.
Oh, okay.
And then transplant them into the ground. So that's up to the temperature and all the
rest.
There'll be variables in the weather. Go ahead.
Yeah. I've got about a 3.5-inch diameter, ground spot in the ground that I prepared, and I'm mixing some engineered soil with the regular soil, and I'm going to make a little mound there on a mound out of it. How many plants could I put in that 3.5-inch diameter, circle?
Three.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I can do that.
All right. That's it.
Okay, and, Bob. Have a good day. Yeah.
If you could go online and email me, I can give you some hints on how to grow the big giant pumpkin if that's what you're trying to do.
That's what my lady friend tries to do every year.
Okay. All right. Well, I can get you up to about 800 pounds.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Okay.
Thanks, Bob.
Email me and I can give you some directions. I know exactly how to do that.
Sure.
I cheat a little bit, but then I know how to do it. Anyway, okay, Bob, thank you.
Have a wonderful day, Bob.
Yeah, happy Easter. Frank is Saratoga. Hi there, Frank.
Hey, good morning, Bob. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I got a house. I bought a house, and I inherited some vines. The developer, it's a subdivided vineyard. And everybody, mm-hmm. the developer left some vines in everybody's backyard and even in the sure. front yard. One of my neighbors said that if I overwater, you can overwater the vines. I wanted to confirm that with you.
Well, yeah, you can if you flood them every day. That'd be too much water. And they are established plants, I'm assuming.
I'd say they're 100 years old. They're, sure. They look pretty thick.
Well, I wouldn't water them at all.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Maybe if they look a little wilted in this this time of the year, I might give them a shot and do a real soaking. And of course, this year we haven't had the rain, so that's another variable you want to be considering. So that's what we got to do on that one. So I would just say I would not be concerned about the watering with established grapevines.
Huh. I thought fruits always needed quite a bit of water. Hmm.
Well, established.
So I guess they're like cherry trees, huh? You could overwater cherry trees and kill them too.
Yeah, you can. But it has to be a consistently like flooding, and most of all of these trees, fruit trees and otherwise, will adapt to just about any way you want to do anything. So I think just don't worry about it.
Okay, sound wisdom from the master. Thank you so much.
All right, Frank. Happy Easter, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, let's go to Candy in Mountain View. Hi.
Hi, dear. Happy Easter to you, and Merry
Thank
Christmas.
You.
I will celebrate.
Of course. I don't have my tooth in the morning, that's right.
You just covered, I think, my question, because I've been concerned about my fruit trees. I've got a French plum and a Rioso gem that I'm totally in love with. And because mm-hmm. it hasn't rained, I was thinking, ooh, maybe I'll go out there and water it today.
How old what are is- they?
Oh, huh. Easily 15 years.
Okay. They have gone through a drought. Many, uh-huh. 74, 75, 76, and they survived it. I would, though, with established trees at this time of the year, I would water really well once a month.
Once a month, okay.
Yeah.
Now, really well, if I just leave the hose
overnight.
With a trickle, it's overnight. Oh, I gotcha. Yeah.
Okay.
So, like, start at 9 in the morning and then shut it off at 9 in the morning.
There you go. You got it. All right,
I got
Candy.
It. Thank right. you so much.
Well, thank
and do
you
have
so
a
much.
Happy
I will. I'm going to be busy, but that's okay. I have to give up my nap. All right, Candy. Thank you so much for that call, and thanks for listening. Let's go to William in Riverbank. Hi there, William.
Good morning, Bob. Happy Easter.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking my call. I was calling, was a little maybe confused from earlier. Is it too late to do Actinivate if you already have fruit set?
On what?
apricots, peaches, and plums, I guess. They're all have gotten fruit set already.
Okay, well, the only one I would be concerned is the peaches. And if they don't have curly leaf, then I wouldn't spray. But if they do, I would go ahead and use the Actinovate.
It is okay after. Okay, cool. And secondarily, thank you. The spinosad worked on the boring beetle for the apricot where they were getting through to the trunk, and it's actually healing, and I have hundreds of apricots this year, so thank you.
Well, that's great. Great, William. All right.
Do I type another quick one, or if you've got another caller, I can
email go
it.
Ahead. You got me.
On a sago palm, I had transplanted from my mom's yard. I took off the bottom rung so you could actually move it without skewering yourself. And it's been about 2 weeks, and the top leaves are starting to brown. I'm wondering if it might be an overwatering issue or a climate change issue, if I should just let it go.
I really wouldn't be overly concerned unless they're a lot of check out the soil. If it's saturated, then be very careful about your watering.
Because they need very little water, right? As opposed
that is
to
correct.
Susceptible to overwatering.
But
it's
just recently transplanted, so you know, be careful of what you do. You may, you know, never mind. But then it's a matter of you got to water well, but less often. How's that sound?
Kind of like the fruit trees.
There you go. Exactly. Right. Okay.
Okay. Thanks so much for your time. Have a great day.
All right. You got it. And let's get to John real quickly. Hi there, John.
Hi. Thank you. Good morning. I have a problem with grubs in the lawn, and the raccoons roll up the sod to eat the grubs.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit. And you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.